Aloha, I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak. Welcome to The Body Show. Each week we talk about health and fitness, but none of what we discuss replaces a visit to your own primary care provider. Healthy aging, we all wish for that. But how can we protect ourselves from the normal process of just getting older? Can we do anything to help avoid things like heart disease, arthritis, and more? Antioxidants and anti-inflammatory medications, they're not the same, you know. They've been talked about a lot, and sometimes the results that we see so far don't really show us what we might think. But there's a new molecule in town. It's called astaxanthin. Dave Wadamol from Cardex Pharmaceuticals and Dr. Bradley Wilcox are in the studio to tell us more about the latest findings about what may just be a molecule to help really a lot of different processes that are associated with inflammation in the body. We'll be taking your calls in just a few minutes at 941-3689 on Oahu. Toll free from Neighbor Islands, 877-941-3689. First in medical news, we've got a conference coming on this weekend. Claire Santos is in the studio here to tell us about an upcoming AARP Bank of Hawaii sponsored event taking place at the Japanese Cultural Center this Saturday called Reboot Your Life. Claire, do I need a reboot?
If you're over 45, we'd be happy to have you come and reboot, but otherwise you can come help us reboot.
I'll help you reboot for about 4 more years, and then I'll join you. So tell us, what am I rebooting, and who would want to go to this conference? And you said over 45, but it has a lot of great information. Who should join you?
Pretty much anyone who's thinking about retiring or has recently retired should come to this seminar. It's a 4-hour free seminar being given at the Japanese Cultural Center this Saturday from 8 till noon. And we'll have concurrent conferences running in the areas of health and fitness, work, money, travel, and technology.
Okay, so now the event is called Reboot Your Life, Savvy Strategies for the Second Half, and it's at the Japanese Cultural Center. But you have a keynote speaker who is very well known. Who's attracting everybody? There's a great speaker that I want to hear. And tell me a little bit more about that.
We have an awesome keynote speaker in Christopher Gardner. He's an entrepreneur and author of The Pursuit of Happiness, if you remember the Will Smith movie based on the book. Mr. Gardner really has powerful insights that can lead you to uncovering your own special gifts and help you connect with people who can support you and empower you to embrace your own possibilities in life.
So I can retire next week then if
Absolutely.
I go Saturday, right?
Yeah.
Okay, now if people are interested and they want to know more about the conference or they want to know more about what they might learn during the conference, how can they get in touch with you or AARP or what could they do?
We have a phone number that everyone can call, 545-6007 for registration. Again, that's 545-6007.
And the conference takes place when again?
This Saturday from 8 a.m. till noon at the Japanese Cultural Center, Manoa Grand Ballroom.
And the cost, I mean, you know, is
Absolutely
the best
free.
One ever.
Yeah, free conference.
It's free, and there's good parking there, too.
There's good parking.
There's lots of it. And I know that seems silly, but here in Hawaii, you need to know where to park. And so I must say, there's good parking over there. Now, you've got some wonderful folks who are going to be talking. Tell me a little bit about who's going to be part of this whole Reboot Your Life. You've got some folks who we know from the show, too.
We do. We'll be leading off. I'll be giving a speech about patient advocacy, health literacy, health disparities, how to help people become their own advocates. And that will be followed by Christy Kessler, who's author.
She's been on. Yep, she was on the show.
She's been on the show. She's the author of 5 Steps to Being Your Own Patient Advocate, which is awesome. We'll have neurologist Dr. Corey Leo on.
He's been on the show.
He's been
okay.
on the show talking about memory and how we're going to get through our later years. And we will have you, Dr. Kozak, discussing our physical changes and how to prevent
problems. I've been on the show. I'm on it right now. And then you have a second session, and we've got some other folks that we know. You've got Bert Lum. He is part of Bite Marks.
He'll be on. That's true.
Bite Marks Cafe, which is on this every Wednesday, same station, same time. And then you have Casey Carlberg.
Casey will be on talking about health and fitness and core strength exercises we can do as the years go on. And she'll be accompanied and followed by Marcy Nowak, who's an exercise physiologist, and she'll be able to discuss really important topics of bone and joint health, posture, balance, fall prevention. That becomes more and more important for us as we age.
Fantastic. A lot of folks that I know, and definitely looking forward to it. And then later that afternoon, you have a film screening. Is that right?
Yes, an awesome film screening will happen at 6 p.m.
Screaming about the screening.
Screaming,
you got
film.
It. So it sounds like a great program. Now, if somebody's interested, again, it's this Saturday, 8 a.m. to noon, totally free, Japanese Cultural Center. Give them a holler, 545-6007. Thanks again to Claire Santos for volunteering for AARP and for organizing this conference, and also for Bank of Hawaii for helping to sponsor it. Thanks for telling us about it, Claire. We'll see you there Saturday.
Thanks so much. See you there.
You got it. All right. Well, we're talking about something interesting today that, you know, is a new nutraceutical, which means that it's a supplement and maybe it does not necessarily get prescribed by your doctor, but you're not necessarily going to find it at GNC, astaxanthin. And we've got Dr. Bradley Wilcox and CEO of Cardex Pharmaceuticals, Dave Wadamul, in the studio here to tell us a little bit more about what's the difference, antioxidants, anti-inflammatories, why do we need them? Why do we want them? And how can this help us in the future? Dr. Bradley, Dave Wadamul, welcome to The Body Show.
Thank you.
Great. Great to be here.
Now, Dr. Wilcox, you work a lot with people as they get older and also with the, you worked with, I think, Kuakini and the Honolulu Heart Program, and you're really helping people to age well. What's the secret? I mean, how do we keep ourselves looking young, acting young, feeling healthy? Is there any one secret, or are we discovering that it's a combination of a variety of different things?
Well, I definitely think it's a combination of a variety of things.
I mean, it's going to be exercise. I know it. You're going to make me feel bad already, right?
Yes.
Okay.
But I'm sure you're exercising.
Always. You got it. Okay.
So we've done a number of studies of aging humans, and with the Kuakini Honolulu Heart Program, we know that it's a combination of genes, non-genetic factors, and chance, really. I mean, you can be the healthiest person in the world, have the best genes, but if you happen to step in front of a bus at the wrong time, well, that's the chance part of it. But we've done studies of lifestyle factors where we published a paper in the Journal of the American Medical Association in 2006 where we looked at 10 factors that were important for healthy aging. And we looked at middle-aged men, the Kuakini Honolulu Heart Program men, and we followed them for over 40 years. We found that out of these factors, if you could avoid some of the major risk factors that we all deal with, high blood pressure, high blood sugar, drinking excess alcohol, bad diets, there was a number of things that we found in that study that predicted whether you'd live all the way up to 90 years, actually, in good health. And you could optimize your odds, but if you avoided all the major risk factors, which a number of us could do, you had more than 4 or 5 times the odds of living to be 90 still in good health. So it was really a study of healthy aging. We recently published a paper in the Journal of the American Geriatric Society where we looked at people at older ages in their 70s. This just came out a couple of months ago. Christy Bell, who's an associate professor at the Department of Geriatric Medicine, John A. Burns School of Medicine, was the first author on that paper. And we looked to see if some of these factors were also important in later life. And it turns out that they were. In fact, you could, if you were in, when I say later life, the same study population of aging men of Japanese ancestry, and we looked at people in their 70s, and we said, okay, what are the odds of you living to be 80, they're an average age of about 75. What are the odds of you getting to be 85, 90, 95, or even 100? And we found that you could, the odds of living into your 90s could be increased about 25-fold, even at those older ages, by, again, avoiding some of these common risk factors that you can get treated at your doctor if you have them, or you can try to work on them and without medications by eating better and exercising more.
So let's go back to the Honolulu Heart Study. This was started through Kuakini, mm-hmm, how many years ago?
49 years ago.
almost 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so they took a group of, was it first generations, generation Japanese men?
Yes, it was mainly Nisei men. So these were men of Japanese and Okinawan ancestry that were born in Hawaii and living on the island of, 88% of them were born in Hawaii and 12% born in Japan. But they were all middle-aged in 1965 living on the island of Oahu.
So they took this group of folks, mm-hmm. and it started with about how many?
8,006.
8,006. So they got all of this data. They started in 1965. They monitored these guys for the last 49 years, mm-hmm. and it's still going on now.
It is.
So they're, you know, I have a couple of people who see me who are in this, and
That's
I get
great.
Yearly reports, and they're doing fantastic.
That's
so
great.
They took this group of 8,006 men, and they started studying them in the 1960s. And periodically, they've taken a look at how these men have done and have been able to make some generalizations and also some research-based findings about what are the predictors for living longer. And so what you're saying is some of those predictors would be things like have good blood pressure, have good blood sugar, have good cholesterol. Now, if you have high blood pressure, but you treat it with medication, is that still, quote, a risk factor if it's well treated?
Well, we don't know precisely the answer to that question because nobody has done studies of that length. We certainly know that treating blood pressure decreases risk for mortality, stroke, coronary heart disease.
Yeah, we know it's a good thing to do. If your blood pressure is 160, 180, 200 or so, then treating it is definitely good.
Right.
But if we take a look at risk factors, we're talking about not having high blood pressure. If you have well-treated high blood pressure, that decreases your risk than if it's untreated.
Absolutely.
So now how many men are still alive in the study?
About 260.
So out of 8,006, there's 260 still alive, still living on Oahu?
Most of them.
And they're being followed yearly?
No, we examine them every several years. We're currently in exam cycle 13 right now. So they've had many other ancillary smaller exams, but this is when I say exam cycle, that's the cycle that you try to get everybody
bring
in.
Them all back in, do the further mm-hmm. testing, because they were doing cognitive testing, physical
yes.
testing, blood testing. I mean, when I would see the reports, it would be three or four pages of this comprehensive evaluation that they've had done.
Yes. So,
okay.
I mean, it's a really an amazing study, and these men are they have to receive a lot of credit for, you know.
Oh, sticking with it. I mean,
yes.
you guys are bugging them every few years. Come on in. Give me your blood. Answer all these questions. Who's the president? What's your name? I mean, you know, good that they've stuck with it. So from this group of men, we have learned a lot about the aging process. It's the longest study that I'm aware of, the only study that looks at 49 years worth of data of people just looking at aging and various other health parameters. I don't know of any other study like it.
There are some other studies, for example, the Framingham study.
Poor people in Massachusetts. Yeah.
Right. But
we've been analyzing them to death. Framingham information. No, that's true. That's another one. And
but
those
the,
great people in Massachusetts.
But the number of men in that study originally was only about 2,500. So it's only about one-third of the size. And so you don't really get a large number of people in that study living into their beyond the age of 90. So it's difficult to study the exceptional longevity, people living into their 90s or 100s, unless you have a really, really large sample size and you start later in life. So our men were average about 55 when they started. The Framingham men were much younger than that.
So we've got this wonderful collection of information that's going to help us with the aging process. But we all get older. We get gray hair, we get inflammation, joints start to ache, all these sorts of things. And we really haven't yet figured out if there is a way to prevent that. What are some of the things that you've been working on with Cardex that have really changed your perception of the process of aging and or what you can do to intervene?
Well, I've been Cardex was recently reconstituted with an IPO. Maybe Dave Wattemol can say a little bit more about that, but I was previously on the medical advisory board, and I understand you're reconstituting.
Yes, we are. Yeah, the scientific advisory board.
So
yes.
I've been I've known Dave for several years, and I've always been very impressed with the company all the way back to, wasn't it a spinoff of Hawaii Biotech originally? So, you know, some very successful local companies. And what I'm interested in with regard to as a physician and a researcher with regard to healthy aging is how to optimize healthy aging. What can we do to optimize the aging process? So we're looking at, in our research, we're looking at mechanisms, mechanistically, how and why do we age? And we know that inflammation is a huge factor. In fact, it was one of the predictors, strongest predictors at older ages of whether people would live to be healthy or live at all into older age. And so what the National Institutes of Health is really interested in right now is academia, industry collaborations to really not just to understand the mechanisms, but to develop therapies that help people age better. So that's, you know, the NIH has $30 billion a year in research money. And, the U.S. Congress is saying, well, what are people getting for their money? So there's been there's even a whole new institute created to try to optimize industry and academic collaborations to work on win-win partnerships in order to find therapeutic means, whether it's to prevent cancer or treat cancer or coronary heart disease and even aging. So there's the challenge is there's not a lot out there that we know about in terms of evidence of what really works for aging. You know, you've got because it's a very difficult thing to study.
Sure. I mean, and certainly if there's a lot of money that's being put into something, it's good to really ask those questions. Are you getting your money's worth? What are we learning from this process?
Right.
And let's make sure we appropriate the money into areas that are giving us scientific data that we can use in some fashion to decrease the rates of heart disease, arthritis, and those other sorts of either mobility challenges or life challenges that people may develop as they get older. So I'm happy that Congress is asking for somebody to say where the money's going.
Right. I mean,
it's kind of ironic that Congress wants to know exactly how the money's being spent and wants some sort of accountability, but okay.
Right. And that doesn't mean that basic research that doesn't have a clinical outcome isn't important. It is. Because we've made many discoveries over the years by looking at basic research and just try to understand mechanisms of disease without or mechanisms of just how things work without specifically having a disease focus or a focus on therapeutics. But the buzzword these days has become translational medicine, you know, and there's whole institutes around the country, including one at the University of Hawaii, where you try to translate your research findings into things that benefit the community. And so there is a big emphasis, and I think it's important. We're all getting older. The baby boomers, there's almost 80 million of us. I'm at the tail end of it, of the baby boom years, so I have an interest in living longer and be healthier. I mean, I don't want to just increase my lifespan. I want to increase my health span. I want healthy years. And people, I think, really want to be healthy and productive in later life. They don't want to be burdened with a lot of age-associated diseases. Aging is the number one risk factor for coronary heart disease, stroke, cancer, chronic
lung
disease.
The one thing we can't control.
Right.
Yeah, so, getting older. I saw you flashing your AARP card earlier proudly. I saw that. All right. I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak here in the studio with Dave Wadamul. He is the CEO and president of Cardex Pharmaceuticals, in addition to Dr. Bradley Wilcox. When we come back, we are going to talk some more about what is this new discovery that they're working on and how can this translate into something that you and I could do every single day that we could either use or some way that we can benefit from some of the research that they've worked so hard on. If you have a question or you have a concern and you want to know, hey, what else is going on with the Honolulu Heart Study, or if you're interested in ways that, or you've discovered a way to help yourself reduce the process of aging, then you can join us. Shed us some insight into what you're doing. 941-3689, toll-free Neighbor Islands, 877-941-3689. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Inspired by the great Jake Shimabukuro, we've got Micah Tong in the studio, ready to strum the ukulele, share his unique style, homegrown right here in the islands. And what's the difference between a photographer and a photojournalist? Well, it's more than just being in the right place at the right time. Lisa Hornack shares some of her secrets. That's Tuesday morning at 8 on The Conversation.
I'm Ryan Ozawa.
And I'm Bert Lum.
Next time on Bite Marks Cafe, we'll speak with members of the latest Blue Startup cohort.
These new companies have received mentoring and a small startup investment. What else will it take to nurture them and build Hawaii into a startup paradise?
That's next time on Bite Marks Cafe, Wednesday at 5.
Aloha and welcome back to The Body Show. I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak here in the studio, ready to learn about something new and exciting. We have Dr. Bradley Wilcox here in the studio and Dave Watermull from Cardex Pharmaceuticals. And we're going to be talking about something called astaxanthin. Is it the latest molecule of staying young? Well, if it is, I'm going to start taking it. Okay. So now we heard a little bit right before the break about some things regarding the Honolulu Heart Study. If you found a way that you've developed to decrease your rates of aging, you can join us, 941-3689, toll-free 877-941-3689 from the neighbor islands. But we were talking a little bit about the history of Cardex Pharmaceuticals, which has really come out of a previous company, Hawaii Biotech, and is reinvigorating itself. Dave, what's going on with Cardex, and where have you been, and where are you going?
Well, I just want to say great to be here again. I enjoy seeing everybody here. And, so Cardex has recently gone public. So we are traded under the symbol CDXI, and so we are a public company. But we've been working on this potential solution for inflammation for probably over 10 years. We started at Hawaii Biotech, as you mentioned. We spun Cardex out from Hawaii Biotech, and we've continued to work on it. We've had a very significant amount of scientific effort has gone into it. We've probably spent more than $30 million on the research around this. We've published about 50 papers on it, but astaxanthin itself probably has more than 1,000 published papers in it, including 40 human clinical trials. And so at the end of the day, it's really about addressing what we think is one of the primary underlying driving forces of aging, which is inflammation, which also drives the diseases of aging. We've talked about those in the show here, cardiovascular disease, Alzheimer's, et cetera, diabetes. These are all diseases driven that have a large component of inflammation. But the real key, what we're really trying to do is find something that is an anti-inflammatory that's safe, that you can take every day, literally the rest of your life. Because we have anti-inflammatories already. There's aspirin, there's steroids even, there's anti-TNF drugs. There are anti-inflammatories. But the key is they're not safe enough to take every day to address this issue that plays such a large role in aging.
Because there's side effects, bleeding, infection, various things. And we've also seen other things that we thought might be helpful, vitamin C, vitamin E, as like antioxidants. And yet in the clinical research, we didn't see that they were the blockbuster new supplement to take every day like we thought they would be. So what exactly is astaxanthin?
Well, astaxanthin works differently than vitamin C and vitamin E.
What is it?
Well, we know it as a compound, probably most of us, as a makes salmon pink and lobster red.
Okay.
But
I want that?
It won't make you red.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
The sun will.
I've got to avoid that.
Yes. But okay.
Yeah, but interestingly, it doesn't seem to do that to people, even at quite large doses. That was one of our concerns early on. But it doesn't appear to do that. But the real issue about the difference between vitamin C, vitamin E, and other antioxidants and astaxanthin is that antioxidants are not all the same. I think a lot of people thought that because the mechanism around inflammation was driven by oxidative stress, they thought that any antioxidant would work. And that's not true. You really need to have an antioxidant that, in this particular case, gets inside the cells. Vitamin C does not. Vitamin E does not get into the cells in the right way. That can get into the mitochondria, the energy parts, the organelles that drive energy in the cells. And really attack excessive oxidative stress at the mitochondrial level and mitigate or prevent the pathological activation of disease pathways, particularly inflammatory pathways, that occur because of the excess, excess oxidative stress in the mitochondria.
So you're really getting down to the cellular level. We're talking about inflammation that is occurring, whether it be in joints, whether it be in arteries, whether it be in an organ, but you're trying to get at the actual source of that, which you're suggesting starts in the mitochondria.
And in fact, we have all these different diseases. We have different doctors that, you know, we call them different things. But when you look at these diseases molecularly, they're very similar. You're talking about inflammatory pathways that have the same actors in them. And they're, and if you look far enough upstream, you get to the mitochondria where the problem starts.
And that's where the molecule that you guys are working with, astaxanthin, starts in that mitochondria.
And we know that astaxanthin actually locates in mitochondria. And we and others have been able to measure the reduction in oxidative stress and inflammatory cytokines and actors with astaxanthin as well. So that's been demonstrated.
So the higher the level of astaxanthin, the lower the level of oxidation and stress in the mitochondria.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
And so the corollary there, you would think, is higher level equals less oxidation equals, go down the line, less inflammation.
Exactly.
I think I'm understanding this. Okay, we've got a caller on the line. We've got Laurel from IAEA. Laurel, welcome to the Body Show.
Oh, hello. Thank you. I think you've answered my question already with this example. Well, however you pronounce it.
Yeah, I know. I was working on it. Astaxanthin. That's what we're talking about. Right.
Yes, I've already... I'm not a tail-end baby boomer. I think I'm in the middle, but 2 years ago I decided I want to age well. So I first became a vegetarian, and now I'm slowly working my way to be a vegan. And I do yoga 6 days a week. I swim. I have cleaned up my diet, so I'm low on sugars and carbohydrates and lots of green vegetables. So I think I'm doing everything I possibly can, including that baby aspirin a day and multivitamins. And now I think the next step is I need to know, oh, because by the way, just so you know, what started this was every morning I would wake up and my joints were so achy, I felt like I was bent over and crippled for 5 minutes just to get out of bed. But now that I've cleaned dairy out of my diet, I have no joint pains anymore. So I feel great, but I'm thinking I want to be great when I'm 90, and I need to know what foods should I definitely avoid for joint inflammation, and what foods should I absolutely include in my diet, and maybe some of them have this astaxanthin in them.
Well, it's a great question because you really did take a close inventory about what you were doing in your life and said, okay, I've got to make some changes. I'm going to reduce stress. I'll do yoga. I'll do swimming. I'll work on my diet. And all those things are absolutely fantastic. You know, different people find different things work for them as far as joint aches and pains and dietary changes. And you eliminated dairy, and some other people might eliminate something else in their diet and get a beneficial effect. And so really, I give you credit for sticking with it and really keeping an eye out on trying to stay as healthy as possible. Dr. Wilcox, you see a lot of folks when they get, as they get older and as they age. Are there good foods that people should add that have healthy things in it that we should focus on? And are there foods, and I know some of my faves are on this list, right? I know French fries are on the avoided list, and pretty much lots of desserts are on the avoided list. I'm sure donuts are on that list. So, you know, what are things that people could add in their diet to stay healthy? And what other than, you know, my admissions of guilt should they avoid?
Well, there are foods that have anti-inflammatory qualities, and I think some of the most well-known are probably the foods that are high in omega-3 fatty acids. We know that omega-3s are pretty big players in the inflammation pathways, and foods that have we know a lot of foods that have high levels of omega-3, whether they be plant foods or fish like salmon, tuna. You know, those are foods that are rich in omega-3, foods from the sea, seaweeds. You have other that have fucoidin and other carotenoids, astaxanthins as well. But there's foods, turmeric, soy foods that have flavonoids. They're vegetables, fruits. Those are all really good foods for.
So those are good things to add.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what should I take out?
Well,
what should Laurel take out?
Well, I think you know, foods that are deep fried, and you have to be careful if you're eating too much meat. I mean, she's gone
vegan, so there's no meat involved.
Right.
There's no fish involved. There's no dairy. There's
right.
no eggs. So, I mean, she's you've done a great job so far, Laurel. I mean, you've eliminated a lot of stuff. Although, do be careful to be healthy, because certainly with any type of dietary restriction, you want to find those nutrients in other sources as well.
Yes.
So that's something to keep an eye out for, and maybe talk with a nutritionist. Make sure you're getting enough of those nutrients that you need.
I've worked with most of my career. I've worked on the Okinawan population. We have a large study of centenarians, the Okinawa Centenarian Study, and you know, their diet was dominated by plant foods. They were never vegetarians. Pork is a traditional food, and they used lard in their cooking, but the amount that they had was, meat was more of a garnish than a main dish. It was lots of vegetables, lots and lots, especially sweet potatoes. And those are actually quite anti-inflammatory, you know, the good old purple Okinawan sweet potato. So, and that was the main carbohydrate, sweet potatoes for breakfast, sweet potatoes for lunch, sweet potatoes for dinner. Those were the side dishes, not bread, not rice. And so you had a very balanced diet, but it didn't eliminate things altogether. Some people find it easier to eliminate certain foods, but sometimes that works best for them. So you know, I'm not advocating one approach over another. I'm just saying it's about balance.
Well, and there seems to be a theme. If it's green and leafy, it's probably good for you.
Yes.
And it may not taste like you're craving it on Friday night, but it's probably good for you and has a lot of nutrients in there that you might want to go ahead and focus on eating. So green leafy stuff, go for it. Fried, deep fried, whatever it might be, a little bit. You said you don't have to avoid it, but don't make it your main dish.
Right. And okay. One thing I wanted to mention, too, about our work with the Kuakini Honolulu Heart Program is that that's an observational study. It's not a clinical trial. So, I mean, I'm very much interested in working with Dave and trying to understand mechanism. We understand. We look at what people do in their normal daily life. So they're not taking specific things and looking for specific outcomes. They're just taking what they take in terms of vitamins, minerals, or foods, and you know, whatever they do in their daily life. And then we track them and see how they do. So what I'm thinking of that might be a good collaboration with Dave is, you know, is to do clinical trials with populations of you know, broad a swath of the population at certain aging-related outcomes. But, you know, as far as aging and longevity, I think we'd have to wait about 50 years to get...
You're right, and that's part of the difficulty with doing clinical trials,
right.
Looking at trying to prevent something, because
right.
often what you're trying to prevent may not happen for 5, 10, 15 years, and it makes it a little bit more difficult to evaluate, but not
right.
impossible. You know,
right.
thank God there were those, you know, 8,006 men who signed up to be part of the Honolulu Heart Study. We're all benefiting from
yes.
their efforts.
Yes, and one thing we've been working on the last few years in the Honolulu Heart Study is to try to understand what we call intermediate phenotypes of aging. In other words, what are the biomarkers? How can we tell the rate at which people are aging? So that can give you some intermediate points. You know, to if you can figure out what are the factors that you can gauge your rate of aging. For example, calcium in the coronary arteries or the rate at which you develop, that's a very good marker of the number one aging-related disease, coronary heart disease. So if you can measure coronary calcium, then you could do a clinical trial, for example, with astaxanthin or whatever compound you're interested in and see does it decrease the rate of accumulation of calcium in your coronary arteries. So, but
there are some studies that can be done.
Certainly, with aging-related outcomes.
Absolutely. Well, we've got Tom on the phone from Kaneohe. Tom, welcome to The Body Show.
Oh, hi, Doc.
Hi there. Hi. What can we do for you?
Oh, just real interested in today's topic in specific. It's funny that your last caller was mentioning a vegan or close to vegan diet, and my wife and I actually jumped on that bandwagon a couple of years ago. But I actually was calling about a compound that's out there, and I'm sure one of your doctors there have heard of it. It's there's a whole generation of peptides now that are supposed to encourage your body to release and also absorb its own growth hormone at a larger rate. The most recent generation is, I think it's called hexarelin, but it's based on another compound called GHRP, and there were several generations of that, and I guess they're still working on it. The problem is people can't find find it on the market in a guaranteed healthy form, you know, because it's a lot of it's being made overseas in China and this kind of stuff, and who knows what's in it, you know, besides the compound.
So, Tom, it sounds like you've certainly been looking at some of these issues, wanting to find out if there's something more commercially available, something that people could choose if they wanted to take a supplement. And you've heard about something to do with peptides. Dr. Brad, have you heard about some of the stuff that he's talking about?
I'm not really familiar with that particular compound, but I... in terms of aging and growth hormone, I mean, there's a couple issues. I know that when you look at cross-sectional studies, you just take a group of people, and some people are healthier than others. The healthier ones tend to have higher levels of growth hormone and insulin-like growth factor, but we don't know if that's cause or effect, because as you age, you lose... You know, your hormonal systems age too, and you get lower levels of growth hormones like insulin, like growth factor, and growth hormone. You get lower levels of testosterone and estrogen. So there's the theory is if you replace these, you know, maybe you'll do better, or maybe if you find a compound that helps you release more. But the evidence on most of these is pretty thin, and we know specifically it's illegal to inject someone with growth hormone. It's an off-label use. And we know in model organisms that when I say model organisms of aging, like rodents, for example, they've been well studied, and there's the rodents that live longer actually have less growth hormone. So maybe you'll be healthier, but maybe the length of your life might be short. It's unclear. And human studies of growth hormone, if you inject growth hormone to older people, they tend to get diabetes and, you know, joint pains and aches. So there's a lot of controversy around that area that we need to study it more.
Well, and I certainly think it sounds like if it's not available in the U.S., if it's being imported from another country, and for anything, whether it be a supplement, whether it be a medication, whether it be a prescription, make sure you know where you're getting it from and it's an approved source, because you never want to start taking something and have there be a mystery about what's in that bottle and not be 100% certain. And certainly, even with some of the things that we know what's in it, there were some extra stuff. OxyPro Elite, about a year or so ago, had the issues with something that was causing liver damage that was in that particular supplement. And so always be careful if you're taking anything to make sure that you are certain what's in there and that it's coming from a reputable source, because that certainly can be something concerning. Now, we're going to take a quick short break, and then when we come back, we're going to hear some more about astaxanthin and how did this get discovered and where is it headed as far as something people could use and is it safe and how much. And we're going to get into a little bit more of the specifics, but we're going to take a quick break first. I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak here in the studio with Dr. Bradley Wilcox and Dave Wadamul, and you are listening to The Body Show. You can join us at 941-3689, toll free 877-941-3689. And when we come back, we're going to talk more about astaxanthin and what's going on with that. And if you want some, where can you get it? We'll be right back in just a few minutes.
Jeff Peterson and friends Hana Ho brings this versatile Hoku Award-winning guitarist back to the Palikou Theater for his second benefit concert for HPR. Sharing the stage with Jeff on Sunday, August 3rd at 4 p.m., Raiatea Helm, Siro Pahinui, and John Kolivas. Last year's concert was sold out. Reserve your seats now at hprtickets.org or by calling 955-8821 during business hours.
On the next Humankind.
If someone was in a car accident outside the window and you saw a lot of blood, you would run out there to stop the bleeding in any way you can. The kind of emotional issues that we're seeing with kids is not visible, but they're bleeding.
We hear some positive coping strategies for helping an overstressed generation. I'm David Freudberg. Join us for Humankind.
This evening at 6:30, right after Marketplace.
Aloha. Welcome back to The Body Show. I'm Dr. Kathy Kozak here in the studio with Dr. Bradley Wilcox and Dave Wattemul from Cardex Pharmaceuticals. We're talking about healthy aging. How can we all feel younger and healthier as we get older? And before the break, we were talking with Tom from Kaneohe. He had a question about something we had not heard about, peptides that he was describing being studied, and he was finding that he could get these from other sources, but not easily here in Honolulu or in the United States. Now, Dave, you were nodding when we were talking about that, about different ways that people can approach taking supplements. And I want to hear a little bit more, as I'm sure some of our listeners do, about astaxanthin. I'm an astaxanthin novice. It's not a FDA-prescribed medicine. I don't prescribe it in my office. I don't know really a whole lot about it. So how did you discover this, or how did the company discover this, and what do they know about it so far? Is it something that people can use, and if so, how would they obtain it?
It's a very interesting molecule. I actually first came across it when I was in the investment banker, and the company asked me to help them raise some money for a process that could make astaxanthin, but they were using it for salmon feed to help make salmon pink, and I thought it was a nice colorant, etc. But it turns out that salmon without astaxanthin are gray, but they're smaller. They don't reproduce as well. They get more infections, and they weren't strong enough to swim upstream. That, as a former biotech analyst on Wall Street, I said, you know, something's going on, very interesting is going on here besides just pink. And when we start to look into, at that time, this is, you know, over 10 years ago, there was a little research, not a whole lot, not like today. But at that time, there was some intriguing research on its anti-inflammatory type of activity. And over the last 10 years now, astaxanthin has over 1,000 published papers, as I mentioned earlier, 40 human clinical trials. And the FDA, and this is a little bit about what we're referring to, has weighed in on its safety. It has given it its GRAS designation that's generally recognized as safe. That's the ultimate in safety that the FDA can confer to a compound. It's a compound that you can use in food or use as a dietary supplement. For example, aspirin could not qualify for GRAS because it's not safe enough to take on a regular basis as part of food, or, you know, et cetera. So astaxanthin has achieved a certain level of knowledge base that I think is very important when people think about supplements. While there are supplements available today from microalgal sources where astaxanthin is the key component, what we're doing with Cardax is to actually make a nature-identical synthetic copy of astaxanthin so it can be nearly 100% pure in astaxanthin, which obviously is what the FDA likes as well. And when you talked earlier about making sure that what you knew is in the bottle, that's what we want to we're going to be able to accomplish with that. Our partner is one of the major large chemical companies in the world, BASF, who makes most of the vitamin E that people probably take today, or vitamin D, vitamin C, et cetera. So we can be sure about how it's made, about its purity, about its quality, and the FDA has weighed in on its safety. So all of that's an unusual combination, especially compared to other supplements that are out there today. Now, we do plan to take astaxanthin and expand the already significant amount of research that's been done on it, do additional clinical trials, both to help for dietary supplements, but also to move into a pharmaceutical approval for our astaxanthin. And we would do that through the normal FDA process, and that will take some years. The dietary supplement is in near term. People will be able to buy that in a fairly short period of time. But the pharmaceutical will take longer, probably in the 3 to 5 year range. But what we can do in the pharmaceutical area, which is interesting, is to take, as soon as this is approved, take the bottle from the shelf and use that as our drug substance, if you will, for our pharmaceutical trials.
So where you're at right now is you have a molecule, astaxanthin. You're working on a purification process.
Well, that's complete.
The purification is done. So you have this supplement. Now, some people might refer to it as a, quote, nutraceutical. What exactly does that mean in comparison to supplement or pharmaceutical?
A dietary supplement and nutraceutical are really interchangeable. Nutraceutical is more of an industry or consumer word. Dietary supplement is an FDA or regulatory definition.
Okay. So you have this already.
Yes.
It's available research.
We are researching it. Our product is not available yet on the marketplace, but it won't be long. There are microalgal products that are on the market, dietary supplements that have gotten the GRAS approval that I mentioned earlier, that do have astaxanthin in them, and those have been studied, pretty extensively.
How are they different than yours?
So a microalgal extract, so you grow microalgae, you would extract the lipophilic compounds from it that includes astaxanthin, but many, many other compounds. Ours would be nearly a 99% plus pure astaxanthin.
So those other things that you might get when you're taking these, like you said, lipophilic products from the algae are also in some of these other currently commercially available supplements, like Bioastin, for example.
Yes.
So there are some other things in there.
Yes.
And what you would be looking at is making it pure astaxanthin with the intention that that would in some way eliminate those other things that may not be considered helpful and would be a purer product.
And of course, we could make this at very, very large scale. We can address a mass market, which we think is there for a powerful, safe anti-inflammatory. There are certainly limitations on the production capacity of microalgal production. And so when you talk about, for example, you mentioned osteoarthritis earlier, there's at least 150 million people globally in the middle class who have osteoarthritis. We can address that market, whereas microalgal production will have a hard time addressing more than 100,000 or 200,000 people.
And the studies have shown that you mentioned there's a lot of studies using astaxanthin. The studies have shown that it treats arthritis, prevents arthritis, decreases the pain from. What does it show specifically for arthritis?
What you see with astaxanthin is a powerful anti-inflammatory. When you talk about treating osteoarthritis today, what do you use? You use aspirin, you use Celebrex, you use Aleve, steroids. So you use powerful anti-inflammatories to treat that. What we've seen with astaxanthin is a reduction in COX-1, COX-2, prostaglandin E2, which is what aspirin works on. Reduction, probably most importantly, in TNF-alpha, which is a major actor in the whole inflammatory cascade. So you see a broad impact on inflammation with astaxanthin.
So the same thing you would expect in someone who has arthritis that is causing them symptoms, knee pain, hip pain, whatever it might be, instead of reaching for aspirin, Aleve, Celebrex, any of those other sorts of medications, you could reach for astaxanthin, knowing that it's considered safe and may be equally as effective as some of the other medications.
And instead of acting on one component of this multi-part cascade, we're talking about working very upstream.
On several components.
On many components in the inflammation cascade.
All right, we've got a couple of callers in the line. We have Gary from Hawaii Kai. Gary, welcome to The Body Show.
Thank you, Doctor. I was just wondering what the latest thinking is from the scientific community on the calorie reduction diets that I think were done a number of years ago in mice and showed some real advantages in longevity and just general health. But then I think more recently there was some news that called that into question, but then they said, no, that wasn't interpreted correctly. So I just wondered what the thought was on calorie, significantly reduced calorie diets and longevity.
I hope the news is bad, Gary. But that's just me because it's dinner time. Dr. Brad, should we be reducing our calories? Is that going to make me live longer?
Well, I think the evidence for the term is caloric restriction, or now it's termed more dietary restriction because there's restriction of certain amino acids. seems to have the same effect. But there's evidence that ranges all the way from yeast to worms to rodents, and now early evidence with humans
so
as well.
So eat less equals live longer?
Right. I mean, in general, the study model has been to have one group that eats ad libitum, so they eat sort of their normal diet. Another group restricts about to a level of about 30% less. So the studies that the caller, who has very aptly seems to have followed the literature well, there was one study that came out from a colleague of mine at the National Institute on Aging where there's a colony of rhesus monkeys that have been calorically restricted for, gosh, a couple of decades now. And that study was negative. In other words, the monkeys were much healthier, but they didn't have a reduction in mortality. Then there was another study that came out from another colony of rhesus monkeys at University of Wisconsin by Rick Weindrick's group. And that study was positive. So it did suggest that. And so now there's going to be a paper actually coming out that reconciles the two studies where the two study groups jointly publish why they thought the outcomes were different. Personally, I know both studies well, and there were some issues with regard to whether the National Institute on Aging study, the intramural group there, there wasn't a big difference in the two diets, in the control group and the experimental group. Yet, so there were some questions whether both groups were somewhat calorically restricted, so that it wasn't.
So, what's the bottom line? You're talking about rhesus monkeys and calories and restriction and eat less equals live longer. Is that what you're telling me?
In general, yes. It's
thanks, Brad. It's dinner time.
That's something we've
eat
also
less, live longer, and then we'll go to Claire's session on the pursuit of happiness and realize that I don't know. Maybe I'll be happier. Who knows? So, in general, Gary's right. There's a question about this, but the scientific consensus is calorie restriction may lead to longer life.
Yes, a longer lifespan and health span. The human data are we still need to work on that, but certainly with the short-term human clinical studies, the same kind of what I'll call phenotypes, better insulin sensitivity, leaner, changes in thyroid hormones, those things that reflect what you see in the animal studies seem to occur in the humans too. And so it's obviously you have to be careful. You can't do this in children. They'll stunt their growth. You can't do this in very old people because they're less tolerant to the effects. So, and you can't do it to the point where you're malnourished, because if you're deficient in certain vitamins and minerals, then you'll be doing yourself more harm than good. But
so not for everybody. Might be an association. Always talk with your doctor or nutritionist before you make major diet changes.
Okay. Exactly. Good point.
We have one more time for one more caller. We've got Stacy from Kaimuki. Stacy, welcome to the Body Show.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for being so patient. What can we do for you?
Okay, well, you've talked about astaxanthin causing decreased inflammation, and you mentioned inflammation as a factor in Alzheimer's disease. I'm concerned about not living long enough to get dementia, and I'm wondering, what about other forms of dementia?
Okay, so what is your question, Stacy?
Okay, so if I were to take astaxanthin, how much would it decrease the likelihood of getting dementia?
Okay,
as opposed to other things.
Well, it's an interesting question because, we were talking right before the show started about the impact, the upcoming and progressive issue regarding dementia, Alzheimer's, and otherwise, that seems to be hitting the baby boomer population as they age. About 10,000 people every day become in that baby boomer population become 65 or older. And so that's a huge issue. And, dementia is certainly something scary because none of us really wish to have that. So, when we look at the markers of inflammation and we look at the markers of Alzheimer's and other types of dementia, we have a long way to go to figure out how we can work on trying to prevent dementia, because the process actually starts when you're much younger. It starts in your 30s and 40s and 50s, and we think that's when some of the biochemical changes happen that start to cause the memory effects in your 60s, 70s, and 80s. So, you know, there's a huge need for more research in this area, and they're just now looking at some of the ways in which we can do early detection of Alzheimer's, molecular testing, genetic testing. We're nowhere near getting a good handle on that. Now, as far as astaxanthin and issues with memory and dementia, Dave, any thoughts, any studies that have looked at that so far, as far as making a correlation between the use of something like astaxanthin and other sorts of inflammation? We've talked about arthritis a little bit. We've hinted at cardiovascular disease. Anything in the brain, have we looked at that yet?
There have been some early studies done with astaxanthin looking at, even in humans and in animals, on cognitive decline and other forms of dementia. And I think what is interesting is that there are a number of researchers who have looked at the correlation between inflammation and various forms of dementia. So you can make a case that that there's a good connection there, given that reducing inflammation in general, I think, is a good goal. But it's not proven yet in the way that we would want to have. And so it's one of the things that we have to do in the future. But there are some studies with small numbers of people, patients in humans, looking at improvement in cognitive decline with astaxanthin.
So you've looked at people who have actually had cognitive decline. They've taken astaxanthin, and they've gotten better.
Well, but what you see, I think,
or they've just stabilized and not gotten worse.
You have two groups, and the group that took astaxanthin were better than the people who didn't take it.
And that's sort of one of the things that that Dr. Wilcox, you were talking about, is doing more of the clinical trials. And so there's a lot of research that can be done. And sometimes it's going to take 5, 10, 15, sometimes 20 or more years to get some information that's clinically useful. But it's part of that whole translation process.
Right.
Where do you see the research heading in the near future with something like astaxanthin, or in other things related to aging? Where do we need to go?
Well, that's an excellent question. And the National Institute on Aging, which funds most of the aging research in this country, has an aging interventions testing program. They use animal models, and they're looking for the small molecule compounds like astaxanthin. They're working on resveratrol. They're working on rapamycin, which is actually an antibiotic. Things that work on biological pathways that might be implicated in aging. So inflammatory pathways are one of the big actors. So that's, and this issue with dementia is something that Dave and I have discussed. It's something I'm very interested in perhaps collaborating on a clinical trial to see. We need larger studies. We need to know what's going on. We need to develop therapies that help people age better and decrease their risk for age-related disease. So the evidence isn't in yet, obviously, so this is where we need to start. And I think Dave is very well aware of that, and he's got some outcomes in mind, like osteoarthritis, dementia, and others, for testing with this compound. So we need to get going on this, because people, the boomers are not getting any younger, and we need to find things to help them age more healthfully.
And in general, watch your diet.
Right.
Keep your blood pressure lower, exercise. Those are the things anybody can do right now.
Yes, those are the things that can that have been shown in study after study to help people age more healthfully, have a healthy diet, don't smoke, exercise regularly, drink in moderation or not at all, and, et cetera, et cetera. Control your risk factors. Have
and
a positive
you'll live
attitude.
Longer. There you go. All right. Well, positive attitude right around dinner time when we have to calorically restrict. Well, I want to thank both of you for being on the show today. Dave Wattemoel, CEO and President of Cardex Pharmaceuticals. Dr. Bradley Wilcox, you're working with the Honolulu Heart Study, also working with UH as well. And also, if you're interested in the conference, AARP, it's going to be this Saturday, Japanese Cultural Center. Don't forget, you can find more information about this on our webpage. Our engineer is Beth Ann Kozlovich. Sorry, is our executive producer, Beth Ann. We'll see you next week.